Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
As you know, I try to put a series of shows together every December that sort of tie into the holiday. And, you know, this year is no exception. Today's kind of an experiment. You know, we hear so much about the baby Jesus, you know, the nativity story. And in recent years, we've gotten into the nativity and the story of Jesus and the many discrepancies and contradictions and problems with it. We've gotten into the life story of Jesus. We've gotten into the bogus war on Christmas and how this manufactured controversy appears every, sometimes as early as October, and then rolls through December 25th and sometimes beyond. But today I wanted to do this. You know, we hear so much about the baby Jesus. We hear about the Virgin Mary. How often do we focus on Joseph? Joseph so often to me just seems like kind of a forgotten player in the game. And if you can see the thumbnail image for the broadcast, we kind of depicted that, you know, this kind of sad sack Joseph, this guy who just got the short end of the stick. By the way, thanks to the hugely talented Vincent DePorter for illustrating the thumbnail to the broadcast, a thumbnail featuring kind of a forlorn and frustrated looking Joseph, which is how I just picture the guy in my mind. And so I figured, what if we were to write kind of a monologue, a one-man stage play, so to speak, from the perspective of Joseph, what he might have been doing and saying and thinking in this time period, especially if, say, he had the personality of a skeptic like you or me, right? Wouldn't that be interesting? So that's what the broadcast today is going to be, and I hope you enjoy it. There is no show sponsor today. Today's broadcast is made possible specifically and completely by my supporters on Patreon. And if you are not yet a Patreon supporter, hey, make me your New Year's resolution, or at least one of them, would you? If this broadcast brings benefit to your life, if you enjoy seeing the shows in your podcast feed every Tuesday and you appreciate the fact that they're totally free, if you would miss them if they were ever gone, you know, if you enjoy the show that much, be a patron. You can set the terms of your patronage. You can decide how much per show, per month, whatever. And you can do it all at patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Your support means more than you will ever know. Patreon.com/Seth Andrews. And now, my friends, for your approval, I present a skeptical story of Joseph. The angel came to me in a dream. But how am I supposed to know that the dream is real? How many other dreams have you had where you wake up and then you take action based on what you just dreamed? How often does that happen? You know, I dreamed I was swimming in cottage cheese once. It was a big Olympic-sized swimming pool. Wasn't filled with water. It was filled with cottage cheese. And I was in a race with other swimmers. A big cottage cheese swimming race. You know, I didn't wake up from that dream and then look around and say, well, I need to go out and buy thousands of gallons of cottage cheese and then dig a big hole for a swimming pool and then fill it with cottage cheese. I didn't do that. I have those dreams where I'm flying. You've had those dreams. We've all had the dream where we're flying. You don't see us jumping off the big canyon wall with our arms stretched out. We don't do that. Don't tell anybody else, but I had a dream. I've had more than one, actually, where my fiance, Mary, and I were having sex. You ever had a sex dream? You know, I mean, they can be pretty real. I mean, I woke up all hot and bothered, but then I realized, you know, I wasn't yet married, which means I was having carnal thoughts. I mean, involuntary, sure, I was dreaming, but carnal thoughts about a woman who was not my wife. I mean, that was awkward. I'll tell you, when God can read your mind, it is not easy being a guy in your sexual prime, let me tell you. I've dreamed a lot of things without acting on them because they're just dreams. And then I dreamed of the angel. It was right after I found out that my girlfriend was pregnant and that the father was not me. I mean, it couldn't have been me. And so I get all weird about it, and I'm thinking of ditching the whole relationship, and then I was visited in a dream. Now, you're going to read about this one day. You're going to read about it in Matthew chapter 1. It's going to say, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. Well, first of all, it is true. I'm Joseph, son of David. I'm of the lineage of King David. King David is in my bloodline, in my family line. Did you know that? Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm a descendant of royalty. And you couldn't really tell by looking at me. You know, I'm not a king or a prince myself. I'm just a lowly carpenter. In fact, my life is pretty unremarkable. You know, I shop for clothes at the same stores that everybody else does. I don't have a fancy house. I've got calluses on my hands because my particular trade is what people sometimes refer to as blue-collar work. I'm a carpenter, right? I'm a carpenter. I build stuff. I fix stuff. I'm a carpenter. And you know, I've got a pretty good reputation in this town, I think. Joseph? Yeah, he's a good guy. Joseph's a hard worker. If you need some furniture built, or you need your camel cart fixed, or you need a play set in the backyard for the kids, hey, just call Joseph. He'll hook you up. Joseph's a good guy, an honest man. He's a moral person. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a pretty good reputation. And then I dream about some guy who's wearing wings, and he comes to my house to tell me that I get to be the boyfriend of a visibly pregnant woman who is not my wife and who is decidedly not the mother of my child. Yet when Jesus is eventually born, the scriptures are going to say that Jesus is of the seed of David. Of the seed of David? This makes no sense to me. David is on my timeline. I'm of the line of David. But if I am not Jesus' actual birth dad, his genetic dad, his birth father, how is the child supposed to be of the seed of David? It's not my seed. I was going to ask the angel about this in the dream, but he just made his big announcement, and then he left. No details, no time for Q&A, no chance for me to ask him how I'm supposed to pass this story off to the neighbors when the woman who is not my wife starts showing everything but a wedding ring. It's just awkward. I mean, this is not exactly a sexually progressive town I live in, you know. Sure, it's not the book of Leviticus. You know, somebody sees a baby bump, and before you know it, you're on trial for your life. Yeah, but pregnancy is still the result of sex, and sex is still supposed to be a marriage thing. Mary and I are engaged. We are not married. We are merely betrothed to each other. And so the angel tells me, I'll go ahead and become Mary's husband. My family's watching me, my friends are watching me, my clientele is watching me. There is so much wrong with this story that I can't really even fully convince myself. I mean, just think about the whole thing from the beginning of the timeline, okay? I mean, the recent past, not the beginning of the universe, not that timeline. I mean, yeah, we can ask ourselves why a God who knew everything, past, present, and future, would need to fix his own perfect plan when it failed. Actually, it failed multiple times. After all the other problems with the forbidden fruit, and then the flood, and all the wars, and the constant need to have goats slaughtered whenever human beings made human mistakes. But I'm going to leave that on the table, okay? I will leave those questions, the more philosophical stuff, I'll leave that for you to mull over on your own. I just want to talk about the whole baby Jesus thing from the standpoint of logistics, okay? So let's start at square one. Mary and I fall in love, and we decide we are going to get married. We want to become a husband and wife eventually. And then all of a sudden, before we get married, Mary disappears. She goes off to stay with her cousin, Elizabeth, and Mary is gone for months. I mean, how would you feel? You know, you're in love. You're madly in love. You talk every day. You're committed to each other. And all of a sudden, she just leaves. Not for a couple of days, not for 2 weeks, not for 5 weeks. She's gone for a few months. Yeah, it was weird. And then finally, when she shows back up, she is pregnant. And then she tells me that the father of the baby is God. I mean, you're going to read all about this one day when it is written in the book of Luke. Mary says, "So a guy named Gabriel paid me a visit. He had wings and his feet didn't touch the floor, and he was all glowing with divine power and everything. So he was obviously an angel. And he said, quote, 'Don't be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God.' Essentially, he said you're going to conceive and have a baby, and when he's born, you're supposed to name him Jesus, and God is going to give him the throne of his father David." There's David again, which takes us back to the whole timeline problem. But I didn't mention this to Mary when she was telling me the story. I just listened. But how would you react? It sounds like total crap, does it not? It sounds like, you know, she got herself caught up in a situation with somebody and she just needed a story. But who would come up with a story like this? And my other problem with it, and it's a big one, is that not once, not one time, not once did God ask for Mary's permission. He didn't say, "Mary, would you like to have intercourse with the Holy Spirit? Would you like to have one of your own eggs fertilized in this way? Would you like to become pregnant and then carry the baby to term?" When it's eventually published, go ahead and read the book of Luke, chapter 1, verse 35, quote, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you." This is a quote, and this is not a request. It's a statement of fact. God tells Mary, "I'm going to get you pregnant." And that's just the way it is. No consent was ever given. Ever. You know, telling Mary that being chosen for this great honor means she is highly favored doesn't make it right. Imagine some other guy just showing up in your fiancé's bedroom, entering her sexually, and then saying, "Wow, this must be such a privilege for you." It's creepy. It's morally bankrupt. It's sex without consent. It's rape. But fortunately for God, there is no anti-rape commandment in the Old Testament. And in truth, Yahweh has never been one to play by his own rules anyway. Don't kill, love one another, turn the other cheek, all the stuff he had written down. He didn't do any of those things. So here I am, now I've got Mary, still betrothed to me, still not my wife. And she finally convinces me that God got her pregnant and that the baby daddy is also gonna be the baby. Okay, fine. Now what am I supposed to do about it? According to the story, well, I'm thinking divorce, which is impossible because I'm not even her husband yet. I'll just read you the words of Matthew that are one day going to be written down about my own visit from the angel. You tell me if you can make any sense of this. Matthew is going to write in chapter 1, verses 18 through 20. He's going to say, "This is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about. His mother Mary was pledged. Not married yet, pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit, because Joseph, her husband, Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law, and yet he did not want to expose her to public disgrace. He had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit." Did you see that? Verse 18 says, "Mary and I are pledged, not yet married." But the very next verse calls me Joseph, her husband. I'm a non-spouse husband. I'm a pre-husband. What is that? It makes no sense. And then verse 19 is going to say that to keep Mary from being disgraced in public, I'm going to quietly divorce the woman. Well, I don't understand this at all. How does that keep Mary from being visibly pregnant in a hugely conservative and judgmental town? How does my divorcing her, even in secret, how does that in any way help her reputation? Me removing myself from the equation. Does that even work? Because people already know that Mary and I were engaged. We were already a couple. And then she starts showing that she is with child. And then I just sort of conveniently break up and disappear. What do you think? The neighbors are not going to be looking right at me? Whether the baby's mine or not, everybody's going to assume it's mine. And then, all of a sudden, I call off the marriage, and then I get to be the asshole that abandoned his pregnant fiancé. So you look at that scenario, and then you tell me, how does me divorcing her help either one of us? So the angel of the Lord appears to me and says, "Hey, Joseph, don't panic. Hey, man, this is all part of a plan. Stick around and marry the woman. And we remain an engaged couple, okay?" At any point after this angelic visitation, let's say somebody asks me, "Is Mary pregnant?" What am I supposed to say to this question? If I avoid the question or change the subject or suddenly have to go and just turn and leave, and I say nothing, everybody just assumes we've been, you know, doing a little baby making before the wedding. That's sex outside of the sacred framework of marriage. That means we both broke the seventh commandment, which means everybody and their dog thinks that Mary and I are both adulterers. Sex outside of marriage is adultery, right? Oh, that's going to be great for business. That's going to be perfect. The clients I do not lose, they're all going to have that look when they come in the door, you know. Hey, there's Joseph. Oh, yeah. Joseph couldn't control himself. Joseph couldn't play by the rules, you know, like I'm such a big sinner. The neighbors, oh, they're not going to even need me to say anything. They're more interested in being gossips anyway. These people love to gossip. They're like little clucking church hens, just all the time. That's all they do. "Oh, did you hear about Joseph and Mary? Well, I don't know if she's a cook, but it looks like she's got a bun in the oven." Mm-hmm. "We all know Joseph's a carpenter, but it looks like he's been using his tools after the sun goes down, if you know what I mean." "Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks, God. Thanks for that. Thanks for putting me in that situation." Oh, now you're thinking, why not just tell people the truth? Well, why not just come clean? Tell everybody what actually happened. "Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, I'd like to see you squirm your way through that little conversation. Hey, Joseph, is your girlfriend pregnant?" And then I look him dead in the eye, and with a straight face, I say, "Yeah, but it's not mine. I didn't do it. She got knocked up by God." Now they'll put me in a straitjacket and send me far away. Or better yet, they'll think that I'm just trying to wiggle out of the whole situation with the most ridiculous lie since Abram told Pharaoh that his wife was his sister. And now what? I'm an adulterer and a shitty liar. Oh, but if God's on your side, you can make him believe you. Right? That's what some people are thinking right now. If God's truly with you, who can be against you? Just convince them. Demonstrate to them the truth of your story. Are you actually serious? Oh, yeah, no, it's true. I mean, God got Mary pregnant while she was out on a road trip. You see, she was staying over at Elizabeth's a while back, and a guy named Gabriel told her she was about to be covered with spirit. And, no, wait a minute, that sounds really awful. Let me rephrase. That's not what I was trying to say. Gabriel wasn't a man. He was an angel, right? He was sent from God, and then God's spirit got Mary pregnant. And then after being impregnated by God, she's going to give birth to, to God, who is also the dad. He's the child and the dad. But the child is going to save all of you. He's going to save all of humankind from damnation. So, I mean, you know, you better not give Mary any shit about being pregnant. I mean, the stakes are life and death. The stakes are eternal. I mean, she's the literal mother of God, okay? Oh, sure. Yeah, they're going to totally buy that story, and then they are going to lock me in the funny farm. Fine, what's the other alternative? If I blame it on God, my reputation's shot. So what if I tell people that I'm actually the father? What if I just say, hey, the kid is mine? They're going to assume it anyway. Why not just get out in front of it? Just put out the cover story. Yeah, my girlfriend's pregnant. Who else is going to be the dad? That keeps Yahweh's paternity in the bag, and I don't look like a coward or a creep for trying to get out of it, except then I'd be breaking the 9th commandment about bearing false witness. Back to the book of Proverbs, chapter 12, verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight. On top of all that, we're both back to being seen as adulterers in the eyes of pretty much everyone. I will say this, if they thought that, it would probably be the most exciting thing ever said or written about me. I mean, have you ever stopped to think about who I am, what I represent, what I have done, and how I have done it in the whole of human history? Does anyone else find it so strange, so bizarre, so conspicuous that somebody who's supposedly as important as I am in this story is so generic, so vague, so vanilla? There's only a very few verses ever written about me, and they say almost nothing. Why is the stepfather of God barely mentioned, and when he is, he's about as interesting as a tax return? Speaking of taxes, can we talk for just a second about this census that I'm supposed to go register for? I'm supposed to register for a census? It's a critical part of the tale. The book of Matthew is going to say that I live in Bethlehem. I'm already in Bethlehem. There's not far to travel. But the book of Luke is going to say that I live in Nazareth. And I have to travel to Bethlehem to register for a census for tax purposes. So this one just makes my head spin. First of all, this census, it doesn't actually happen for over half a decade. Like 6 CE. Why am I registering for a census more than 6 years before there was a census? Why do I have to travel to register for a census when we actually register in the cities in which we live? Why would I drag an extremely pregnant Mary on this whole census escapade, endangering the pregnancy, endangering the life of both the child and the mother, when only the male heads of household actually were required to register for a census? Only the male heads of household. There was no reason to bring her. How do I justify that when people see Mary about to burst with child, riding on top of a donkey to a destination she doesn't actually have to go to? What are people going to say? What am I going to say? Oh, yeah, folks, well, about that, well, she's pregnant with God, and God just has to be born here. But why am I talking to people anyway? I should be hiding from people. The book of Matthew is going to talk about this massacre of the innocents, which is happening specifically because Jesus wants to be born like a real human baby. The story goes like this. The awful King Herod, he's worried that King Jesus is going to grow up and dethrone him. So Herod decided to have his murderous soldiers go out all around Bethlehem, and just kill all the male babies. Just kill them all. Just to be sure that Jesus would be one of them. Make sure that Jesus doesn't slip through the cracks and survive. Hey, yo, God. up there, God, hello? Right, you see this guy, right? You see Herod. He's out there. He's supposedly killing innocent babies. Babies. You're going to do something about that, right? I mean, you're God. You're the champion of the innocent. And can't you just put these soldiers to sleep for a year or two? These killers, can't you do something? Give them the stomach flu. You know, they can't kill babies if they're stuck in the bathroom, right? Can you at least confiscate their weapons? Do something. Why in the world would you let hundreds of little boys get stabbed to death just because you want to take human form as part of your destiny? Oh, why bother? He's not even listening. He's sure not listening to me. Boring old Joseph. Boring old Joseph. No, he doesn't care what I think. Hell, I'm not even sure the Herod story's true. Yeah, the book of Matthew is going to say we're fleeing from Herod and that we're going to rush off to Egypt after the kid is born. But the whole book of Luke doesn't even mention Herod at all. That's a pretty big omission, don't you think? And outside of the Bible, well, other historians like Josephus, they won't write a single syllable about Herod's kill rampage on the hunt for a baby Jesus. They're not going to write anything about it at all. That's a pretty big story to miss, don't you think? Here's another one I don't understand. You know, while we're talking like real people, what is up with these three wise men? These three guys, these three wise guys, they're supposed to follow a star to find the maternity ward, right? They're going to follow a star. They're going to follow a giant ball of explosive helium and hydrogen that would cook everything on the planet's surface and is at least the size of our own sun. They're just going to glide along behind a huge fusion reactor as it sets everything and everyone everywhere on fire, killing all the people that this Jesus kid is supposed to grow up and save. What is up with that? Did these guys just skip Astronomy 101? Do they know what a star is? I guess it's possible the star could be a metaphor, you know, like it's a big weather balloon with a candle underneath it. Oh, look, a star. That's possible. Not likely, but it's possible. And still, with this story, the wise men are more interesting than me. They're more interesting than Joseph. People remember the wise men. They'll even sing songs about the wise men. They'll have stories and songs and plays and books and movies about so many biblical characters. Moses dramatically rescued the Israelites. He's got a great hero story in the Bible. David slew Goliath. Elijah flew up to the heavens on a big chariot of fire. How awesome is that? Me, Joseph. Joseph, the one who adopted the Son of God. What do I do? No, really. I mean, what do I do? In the whole story, in the big picture, what do I do? What's my big contribution? Why do so many other minor characters get so much more press in the Word of God? Hell, Amos got a whole book in the Old Testament, right? Amos. Who ever talks about Amos? Here's a little experiment for you, okay? You tell me, what's the first verse of the first book of Amos? You don't know, right? I'll tell you a secret. Nobody knows. Nobody. I'll just tell you. I'll just read it to you right here. Amos, chapter 1, verse 1. It says this, quote, "The words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake." All right, it's boring. Even the earthquake in that verse doesn't happen for 2 full years. But Amos still gets a whole book of the Bible. Hell, Zephaniah got a whole book. Anybody know who Zephaniah is? No. Anybody care who Zephaniah is? No, but he's got his own book. He's got a whole book in the Bible with 2 full chapters. Meanwhile, tell me about my life. What does my life look like? What do I look like? What do I do? When do I do it? Somebody tell me when I get married. Okay, I'm the stepfather of God. I am an important character, supposedly. Will the Bible have an actual wedding date for me and Mary? How long will I live? When and how am I going to die? I don't know. Nobody knows. You want to know why? Because it's not important enough to mention. We know how long Noah lived. Bible tells us Noah got to be 950. The Genesis chapter doesn't say a whole lot, but at least it has those words, and he died. King David had a grand old death. He even knew it was coming. So he gave some instructions to Solomon in 1 Kings. David died in chapter 1, verse 10. He even got a bit of a eulogy about what he did and how long he did it. Judas, the guy who totally is going to sell Jesus out in just over 30 years. Judas. Not only do we know how Judas dies, but we also get an alternative ending, you know, like they do on the special edition Blu-ray. Judas gets two death scenes with specific details, and the church says he is the asshole of the story. But me? Joseph? Joseph, the earthly father of Jesus, Joseph? Nobody's going to know. And you know what? No one's going to care. I'm just the bland, vanilla fill-in guy. What's my legacy going to be? I'll tell you what it's going to be. I get to be a walk-on part in about 7 million Christmas pageants and live nativities over the next several thousand years. My character is going to come out dressed in earth tones. They'll probably give me a cane or a staff, even though I can walk just fine. It looks really good. And I'll just stand next to the manger scene, one manger scene after another, one live nativity after another, looking all thoughtful and constipated. Does Joseph have any lines during these plays? Does he actually get to say anything? No. Joseph doesn't get lines. No, let the angels have lines. Let Mary have lines. Let the wise men have lines. Some of these plays have animals with lines. But not me, not Joseph. I'm just the warm body. And you know what? When the play is over and the lights come up and everybody leaves, try in your mind, just try to remember my face. I'll bet you can't. I'll bet you can't remember what I look like or what I did or when I did it. Just like in the Bible. Mention Joseph in the Bible, and you're just as likely to hear people refer to the Joseph of the book of Genesis. The other Joseph, you know, the one who was sold out by his brothers, and they faked his death and they pawned him off on the Israelites and sold him into slavery. He ended up interpreting Pharaoh's dreams, remember? And by the end of that story, he was the ruler of all of Egypt. You'll hear the name of Joseph and you might think, yeah, Joseph, that Joseph, Joseph in the coat of many colors. It's very possible you won't think of me. Come on, lose a piece of your ceramic nativity Christmas decoration. If you can't find the baby Jesus, well, the whole thing's ruined. If you can't find Mary, it's ruined. But if you misplace Joseph, what have you really lost? Do people pray to my effigy at the Vatican? No, they pray to Jesus. They pray to Mary. Mary and Jesus. Jesus and Mary. Do you hear people astounded at miracles like the bleeding statue of Joseph? Not a Virgin Mary statue, but Joseph. Does that ever make the headlines? Of course it doesn't. Do I even get the honor of manifesting my own face on a piece of toast or in a cloud formation or whatever? Face it, it's never Joseph. It's never Joseph, because Joseph just doesn't matter. In the greatest story ever told, my part is pretty much an interchangeable one. I could be anybody from anywhere. I'm just a gear in the machine. I'm a tool that helped to get the job done. And at the end of the day, my path, my journey, my reputation, my relationship Even my own family line was just ripped out of my own hands and given to somebody else because their legacy was simply more important than mine. My friends, this Christmas season, and in the ones to come, when you're out there seeing these Christmas commemorations play out, and you see a recreation of the manger scene, when you hear a Christmas song like Mary Did You Know, or Sweet Little Jesus Boy, Angels We Have Heard on High, We Three Kings of Orient Are, when you see a church marquee proudly proclaiming, Unto us a child is born, take just a moment. Take a moment in your mind and in your heart. Take a moment for Joseph. Yeah, there's not very much in the Bible about me, but maybe there should have been. Maybe you should have had the chance to read the book of Joseph, where I ask for another visit from the angel to get more information and ask a few questions, where I challenged God's sexual proclivities, where I ask again and again why all this secrecy and chaos and bloodshed was necessary, where I stood up for myself and told Yahweh that, hey, Mary's life and her womb and her future, those belong to her, just as my life and my lineage and my destiny belong to me. Yeah, you know, I think that would have been a really exciting and compelling book. But as that book will never be written, I guess my legacy lies with you. So this holiday, take a moment and raise a glass for poor old Joseph. Give a toast and say my name and remember me. It is quite possible that you are the only one who will. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Whatever the holiday season means to you and for you, I hope it's amazing. Make it yours. Make it your own. Decide what you love about it and do that. I hope it's filled with the people you care the most about. Some good wine, delicious food, some great music, and lots of wonderful memories. However you choose to frame it or celebrate it, have a merry, merry Christmas. And I'll see you back here next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.